Okay, and I have clicked on start again, so we are starting a new recording. And we are going to be starting with quote number 298. That is the new quote that we want to start with today. This quote was not covered last night. So let me give you all the link to number 298 in the room. If you're on 296, you could just scroll down and click a couple times to move to 297 and then to 298. Whichever is easiest for you. We are continuing to read from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. We are continuing to listen to quotes by Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And this, last night, I don't know if it's on the recording or not, because I don't remember if I said it in the first half or the second half, but I do remember joking last night about Sri Nisargadatta, how he was a cigarette-smoking, meat-eating guru. Because, of course, most Indian gurus are, vegetarians. That's very common to be vegetarian. A lot of India is vegetarian. But here we had Nisargadatta, who smoked cigarettes and ate meat, and yet a highly enlightened teacher. So, listen to what he has to say in number 298. Do not be misled by my eating and smoking. So see, he knows that people talked about the fact that he ate meat and smoked, right? Do not be misled by my eating and smoking, reading and talking. My mind is not here. My life is not here. Your world of desires and their fulfillments, of fears and their escapes, is definitely not my world. I do not even perceive it. Yesterday on Facebook I made a post, which I think I'm going to go ahead and pull up right now. So I'm going to run over to my Facebook page and get this post. I don't know if there's a link that I can give you. If I can, I will try. See if I can give you a link to this. I've never tried to share a Facebook link before to a particular post, but maybe I can. I don't know how to do it. Let's see if I can figure it out. Nah, I don't know how. So I'm just going to read to you. So I'm reading to you from a post I made yesterday on Facebook. It's on my wall. And it starts with awake. What is awake? That's the post I'm going to read to you. First of all, awake is a word, which means ultimately it is meaningless. Being meaningless, it can have one meaning to you and another to me. My inner wisdom uses awake to mean awakened from duality completely. When one is awake, there is only self. There is no world. There is no change. Enlightenment is also just a word and can be used differently. For now, I will say enlightenment is the same as self-realization. Something has occurred that has shifted one to new perception. This one no longer believes the world, or believes that he, she is the person, although both are still experienced. A person who is fully self-realized or enlightened disregards the ego entirely because it is the voice of illusion. There is no struggle with the ego because it is seen to be fully and completely meaningless. A person who is awakening has had an experience of realizing he or she is not the person and the world is not real, but still experiences struggle with the ego because attachment to the old ways of thinking have not been fully released. A person who is called to awaken has a definite interest in the teachings of enlightenment, but still believes he or she is a person. These are definitions. The words may be used in a completely different way by another speaker. And then the post goes on from there, but the rest of it, I think, doesn't pertain to this quote, so I'm going to stop there. The rest of it just pertains to how different people use the word differently. So if we look back at what Sri Nisargadatta has said, do not be misled by my eating and smoking, reading and talking. My mind is not here. My life is not here. Your world of desires and their fulfillments, of fears and their escapes, is definitely not my world. I do not even perceive it. This is speaking from the voice of awakened, as I defined it on Facebook yesterday. Awakened meaning, again, completely awakened from duality. There is only self, there is no world, there is no change. And this is the voice that Sri Nisargadatta seemed to always speak from. The voice of not even perceiving a world. And some people may ask, well, how could he smoke and eat meat and talk and read books? I don't know what that's the perception of us, is the only thing I can say. That is our perception. We're the ones that sees a body smoking and eating and talking and reading. And I think that when the mind starts to worry about, well, how is it that he, if he doesn't perceive a world, how is it that he is in a body smoking and drinking? I think that actually that's just a delay tactic of the mind, looking for those answers. I don't even think that we should bark up that street. I think that the clarity for us is simple if we want to stay with simplicity. I simply ask myself, do I still perceive a world? And if the answer is yes, well, then I'm not awake yet, so I need to continue this process. Now, in the definitions I gave yesterday, and again, they are just my definitions, but in the definitions I gave yesterday, there were what you could call four different phases of awakening. The first one is just being called to awaken. And when we're called to awaken, we still fully believe that we are a person, but we find ourselves attracted to the teachings of enlightenment. We might even devour the teachings of enlightenment, but we still think that we are a person. That would have been where I was prior to the I am that I am mantra that I spoke about in the previous recording. Right? Fully believing that I was a person, letting go of thoughts that had previously had meaning. And then after the I am that I am mantra, somehow there was this realization that I'm not the person. That's not what I am. The person isn't my truth. And it wasn't just an intellectual knowing. It was some kind of a realization. Well, the next phase after the person who is called to awaken is the person who is awakening, right? The person who is awakening has had an experience of realizing he or she is not a person and the world is not real, but still experiences struggle with the ego because of attachment to the old ways of thinking. So the realization is there, but there's not a full living of it or a full abiding in it. And then enlightenment or self-realization is defined as one who is now able to fully abide in that realization of self, and there is no struggle with the ego at all. Wherever ego appears, it is easily disregarded because it is seen as the voice of illusion, not me, not my thought, not my perception. I think this might be what the Course calls true perception. And the perception then, of course, would be the real world. But then the Course has something it calls heaven, right? And it talks about how from the real world, you know, the awakening into heaven is very easy. It also mentions that God takes the last step. But it says from here, from this state of seeing, it's not difficult for that next step to be taken. But that next step that it calls heaven would be complete non-duality, not even a perception of a world. And that is the voice that Sri Nisargadatta is speaking with here. He's telling us not to be misled by what we see. He does not perceive a world. And if we just take that without thinking about it or saying, how could that be? If we just take that and realize, well, I do still see a world, then we know that we need to continue to follow guidance. It's easy. There's no confusion. All right, so let's look at number 298 in the journal. It says, when the world of false phenomena is no longer perceived, one is awake. One is not awake when differences are still known. Do not be confused by ideas of mind that want to judge awakeness and non-awakeness. One either knows only self, or one experiences differences. The former is awake, the latter is still dreaming. And you know, A Course in Miracles does say that the real world, or the happy dream, is still a dream. So even if our perception is highly purified to the point of a true perception, even if the ego is extremely easy for us to disregard, there's a full awareness that I am not the body, and I never become confused on that matter. As long as I am still perceiving a world, I'm in the real world and not heaven. Or you could say I'm enlightened or self-realized, but not awake. That's what Sri Nisargadatta is pointing out to us. So when the world of false phenomena is no longer perceived, one is awake. One is not awake when differences are still known. Do not be confused by ideas of mind that want to judge awakeness and non-awakeness. One either knows only self, or one experiences differences. The former is awake, the latter is still dreaming. And I see Gemini is saying, no recording from yesterday. It's not yet been posted, but there will be a recording from yesterday posted later today. So watch for that on Facebook. And of course, reginadonacres.com. For now, let's scroll down and click on number 299. I will also give the link in the room. We're about to cross over into the 300s. Milestones are always fun, don't you think? Okay, number 299, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Without imagination, there is no world. Without imagination, there is no world. All right, let's look at number 299 in the journal. Where does the perception of a world come from? It comes from thoughts given meaning and value. Where do thoughts come from? Imagination given attention. What is imagination? Thinking focused on ideas that are not real. What is helpful then if one wants to realize and know reality? Let thinking be focused in the service of awakening through practices of inquiry, contemplation, and remembrance, or current moment choice. All right, this is again, you're going to see a lot of this question and answer form in step two of my journal. Because again, as I mentioned, what was happening was an investigation or an inquiry was being led by the inner teacher. So the questions were arising and the answers were seen. And it was a whole. As I mentioned last night, it's not that the questions arose and then I had to scratch my head and think about it. You know, let's see, how do I answer that question? You know, that didn't happen. What happened is the question arose and the answer was seen. They were a whole. And it all came from within. So both the question and the answer were provided. So where does the perception of a world come from? The answer that was seen is that it comes from thoughts that are given meaning and value. And in fact, if we were to go back and pull out NTI now and look at NTI Romans chapter 2, we would see that the question that was asked, that is called the tiny mat idea in A Course in Miracles, the question was something like, what would it be like if everything is different than it is, right? And then right after that, the first judgment occurred. The first judgment is the judgment that that was a valuable question. That question had meaning. If the question had never been judged to have value and meaning, then it would have been forgotten and the entire world would not have happened. But when the question arose, what would it be like if everything was different than it is, then a judgment occurred. Ah, that's a good question. That's a meaningful question. That's worth looking at, right? And that mistake of that first judgment occurs over and over and over again. You know, last night I forgot to click on start on the recording, which is why we did a bit of re-recording this morning and why the recording won't be available till later today when I splice it up and get it ready. I mean, that's just something that happened. I forgot. But there was a time when I had thoughts in my mind. And these thoughts will probably sound familiar because I think we all have the same kinds of thoughts. There was a time when I felt like I was responsible to come to ACIM Gather and teach. People were depending on me to post those recordings. And in order for me to remain responsible, I needed to make sure that those recordings were good and posted in a timely manner. So a whole bunch of thoughts there. And I gave those thoughts meaning and value. In other words, the thoughts are basically saying, in a different set of words, if I am to be worthy, I need to post good recordings on time. Because worthy and responsible in my mind were linked, right? You have to be responsible to be worthy. Irresponsible people are unworthy. This was my thought system. So what that means is, once upon a time, if I had forgotten to click on start and forgot to record a teaching, there would have been some suffering that would have occurred with me, because I would have given meaning and value to those thoughts that in order to be worthy, I had to be responsible. In order to be responsible, I had to make sure I clicked on start. I had to make sure that recording was provided. We do that all of the time. These thoughts appear in our mind. We don't even look at them. We don't question them. We just give them meaning and value. And once we give them meaning and value, well, they have meaning and value. In fact, A Course in Miracles, what are the first few lessons all about in the workbook? Isn't it that I give, you know, everything I see, all the meaning it has for me? Isn't it things like these thoughts have no meaning? The unlearning of that? In fact, again, if we went back to Facebook, my post today is about meaninglessness, that we have a freedom from the ego when we realize that everything that is not true is meaningless. Everything the ego says is meaningless. The ego can still chatter away if it wants to, and if we see everything it chatters as meaningless, it has no effect on us. In fact, that was the definition I read to you of enlightenment or self-realization, or we could call it true perception, is that is one who has come to see the ego as completely meaningless and easily disregards it. There is no more struggle with the ego. So meaninglessness, well, that's the way out of perception. That's the way to wake up, is through taking away meaning. But the way into perception, the way into the belief in the world and the belief that I am this person, I am this body, is giving meaning and value. So where does the perception of a world come from? It comes from thoughts that are given meaning and value. Now, where do these thoughts come from? Imagination. They were just made up. And then they were given attention. Even that very first thought, what would it be like if everything was different than it is? That was just made up. It came out of nowhere. But then it was given attention and given meaning and value. The idea, I am unworthy, that is an imagined thought. All thoughts are imagination until they're given attention, meaning, and value, and then they become experience and they seem real. What is imagination? It's thinking focused on ideas that are not real. That's what imagination is. It's just thinking focused on ideas that are not real, such as I'm unworthy, nobody likes me, or I'm the hottest thing to hit the world since sliced bread. There's another one. It's the opposite side of the same coin. I'm better than everyone else. Smarter. Where does the perception of a world come from? It comes from thoughts given meaning and value. Where do thoughts come from? Imagination given attention. What is imagination? Thinking focused on ideas that are not real. And remember, the Sri Nisargadatta quote was simply, without imagination, there is no world. What is helpful then, if one wants to realize and know reality? It's the reversal of that cycle, right? The reversal of imagining thoughts, giving my attention to thoughts, saying they're meaningful and valuable. It's the reversal of that cycle. What is helpful then if one wants to realize and know reality? Let thinking be focused in the service of awakening. That thinking mind is going to think. I have not been able to stop it. I have not been able to say, stop your damn thinking, and make it stop. But that doesn't mean that we don't have influence over the mind, because we do. So if the mind is going to think, we can at least guide the mind in what we want it to think about and how we want it to think. In fact, the A Course in Miracles workbook is all about that. The Course in Miracles workbook is about retraining the mind so that it thinks differently. Let thinking be focused in the service of awakening. And then there's some suggestions here on how the mind can think differently. The first one is through the practice of inquiry, or it's also called investigation. And you can do that. You can do inquiry or investigation all the time. You know, people talk about the question, who am I, as inquiry, but that's not the only question that gets asked in inquiry, at least not in my experience. That's the root of what we're looking for. But there are a lot of questions that get asked in that investigation. For example, if the thought did come up, oh, I'm an idiot because I forgot to click on the start button, then inquiry would focus on that question and say, who says I'm an idiot? Why am I so willing to believe that thought, I'm an idiot? How does the thought, I'm an idiot, feel? Do I like that feeling? Is this how I want to see myself? The teachings of Holy Spirit, have they taught that I'm an idiot? You know, it's just, it's an inquiry. It doesn't, and you see what that inquiry does is it doesn't just take the thought. Without the inquiry, the thought, I'm an idiot, it's just taken, eaten, digested, and it's my experience, I'm the idiot. But inquiry does not allow that eating. It never provides the opportunity for digesting because it asks. It raises the thought to reasonable doubt. And we all know that in a court of law, if there is reasonable doubt, then the accused person is not guilty, right? When your mind, if there's reasonable doubt, the provided thought is not eaten and digested. So inquiry rises reasonable doubt, raises, I think is better. Inquiry raises reasonable doubt so that we do not just eat and digest a thought, an untrue thought. So that's one way thinking is helpful, is through the practice of inquiry. Another way that thinking is helpful is contemplation. I do a lot of contemplation. In fact, I would say, if I was to say, how do I spend most of my focused time, you know, where I'm, you know, kind of sitting in a focused, I call it my quiet time, it's in contemplation. I right now, because of my involvement in the CMC ordination class, I am doing the course workbook again. And of course, that time is contemplating those lessons. As you clearly know, I'm doing the seven steps. I contemplate the seven steps, the quotes within the book. And then other things will cross my attention. You know, like Cheryl Valentine sent me an article over the weekend. Nikki Dobson provided me with an article last week. Every now and then I'll see a post on Facebook that catches my attention. Or I'm reading a novel, and there's even a few things in the novel that have caught my attention that have led to a contemplation. And each contemplation leads to a deepening clarity. It's an opportunity for wisdom to arise. Another practice that's recommended here as useful for the mind is what it calls remembrance, but it defines remembrance as current moment choice. That's really being alert to what the mind is providing. And choosing, do I want to believe that thought or not? Do I want to listen to that thought or not? And you know, the funny thing is, in the beginning, in the very beginning, I really didn't even know, as crazy as this sounds, I wasn't aware of a lot of the thinking going on in the mind. I mean, I knew I thought, like if I had a problem, I knew that I used thinking to try and figure out the answer to the problem. But I was not aware that the thinking was just going on all the time. I was not aware that when a person was speaking to me, the thinking was interpreting them, making judgments about them, you know, already deciding what I was going to say. I just didn't see it. I was blind to it. So, of course, the first time thing that happened on this path was I became aware of the thinking that was happening all of the time. And then I began to learn to discern between what we call the ego thinking and the Holy Spirit thinking. I began to choose not to believe the ego's stories. But at some point, a level of thinking that was so far away from my noticing in the beginning began to become available. And it's a very core thinking. I remember the first time it happened, I was in a restaurant eating dinner, a very nice restaurant. And somehow I dropped my fork on my plate and it made a very loud noise. And I saw the thought, do you want to be embarrassed? I said, no. And you know what? I wasn't. But I realized those kinds of thoughts had always been in my mind. And before, without even seeing the thought, I had chose yes, and I was embarrassed. Later, I began to notice thoughts like, do you want to be annoyed? And they're not really words, by the way. It's not like I hear a voice saying, do you want to be annoyed? But it's like the opportunity to be annoyed is provided. And you can say yes or no to that opportunity. The opportunity for frustration, the opportunity for fear. These very basic level thoughts, way down, hidden underneath the stories, those began to arise up so that I could see the opportunity. Boom, do I want to be annoyed? And I could choose no. Current moment choice. Even if I don't see that level of thought, I just see the thought, he's an asshole. I don't see that. Do you want to dislike him thought? I just see that he's an asshole thought. Well, if I'm alert to that, I can say then, I can use inquiry probably at that level. Why does my mind think that he's an asshole? Why do I think that he's an asshole? Do I want to believe that thought that he's an asshole? And I'm kind of putting inquiry and remembrance together. But the point of this entire teaching, again, without imagination, there is no world, and every one of our thoughts are imagination, and the world comes from us giving meaning to those thoughts. So we do need to use spiritual practices, like the practices of inquiry, contemplation, which brings wisdom to the surface, and remembrance, or current moment choice, in order to get out of the unconscious habit of continuing to believe and give meaning to imagination. So where does the perception of a world come from? It comes from thoughts given meaning and value. Where do thoughts come from? Imagination given attention. What is imagination? Thinking focused on ideas that are not real. What is helpful then, if one wants to realize and know reality? Let thinking be focused in the service of awakening through practices of inquiry, contemplation, and remembrance, or current moment choice. All right, and you can scroll down, and we are going to click on number 300, a milestone. We're crossing into a new three-digit numbering system, 300. And I'm also putting the link in the room, and I'm taking a drink of water. All right, so we are still reading Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, and number 300 says, the moment you allow your imagination to spin, it at once spins out a universe. It is not at all as you imagine, and I am not bound by your imaginings. Again, he's speaking from the voice of the Absolute, the awakened mind. The moment you allow your imagination to spin, it at once spins out a universe. It is not at all as you imagine, and I am not bound by your imaginings. All right, let's look at the journal, number 300. Why watch the thinking and continually bring it back to useful practices? Because mind's imaginative thinking makes the world, which seems so real, but is not. To be free from delusion, one must adhere to realization-centered practices. It's interesting because I am aware of a teaching that, you know, that asks us basically to stop practicing. It tells us that, there's truth in what I'm about to say. You know, it tells us that we are that which we seek. And that, of course, is true. We are that which we seek. And it tells us that it's the act of seeking that keeps us from realizing it. And that can be true. But it's not always true. I'm a firm believer in inner guidance. I don't know how else to say that. And, you know, there are a number of people that have always told me that, you know, that they don't know inner guidance. And I just find that so hard to believe. I think what happens is people get in the habit of ignoring their inner guidance, to the point that it becomes not noticeable because it's so quickly ignored, like it arises and is quickly ignored. And I think there's a number of reasons why people ignore their inner guidance and therefore are not aware of it. But I think the primary reason would just be simply called unworthiness. In fact, I posted on several places on Facebook yesterday, but probably the easiest place to find it is to go to my page, because it has scrolled down in the groups. But if you go to my Facebook page, you will see a post of a candid camera YouTube video. And in this candid camera YouTube video, there's a guy standing in an elevator, you know, and they have three candid camera staff members go onto the elevator, but the staff members face the back of the elevator instead of facing forward like we always do in an elevator. And the person becomes very nervous and then turns around and faces the back just like everyone else. And if you watch, you'll see that it gets even more and more ridiculous how people just do whatever the candid camera staff does. But you know, there's got to be a little wordless thought in them. There's got to be something in them that's letting them know that they're okay facing the front of the elevator. There's no reason to turn around. And yet they ignore that. They ignore that little inner knowingness that what they're doing is fine. And they become afraid, you know, that somehow they're unworthy. They want to be like the crowd. And they turn around and they face the back of the elevator, which makes absolutely no sense, because then you can't even see what floor the elevator's on when the door's open. You have to turn around and look, right? It doesn't even make sense. So peer pressure, wanting to belong, that's one of the reasons we ignore our inner guidance. Whatever reasons they are, like I said, they're all linked to unworthiness. My inner guidance, I trust completely. And for me, because I don't ignore it, it is very clear. I don't have questions about my inner guidance anymore. I did in the beginning, but just like anything else, you know, when you practice with it, you become stronger with it. My inner guidance is so clear. And this very clear guidance that I know I'm to listen to guides me to continue practicing. In fact, if possible, if forgetfulness does not come in, it asks me to practice with my every breath. It never asks me to judge my practicing. It never asks me to judge myself because forgetfulness came in and I didn't practice for a time. It only reminds me that now that I'm aware again, to go back to the practicing. And in fact, my inner guidance at this point is telling me not to stop practicing until I am awake. And you saw how my inner guidance defines awake. No world. In fact, there's something in NTI, I don't remember the exact line, I believe it's in NTI Luke, but there's something in NTI that says something to the degree of, you know, not to let go of practicing, not to stop practicing until you are the truth. Why watch the thinking and continually bring it back to useful practices? Because mind's imaginative thinking makes the world, which seems so real but is not. To be free from delusion, one must adhere to realization-centered practices. This makes perfect sense. This kind of explains the why of the guidance. It reminds me of, wasn't it Einstein that defined insanity as doing the same thing but expecting different results? What if, instead of trusting my own inner guidance and instead of continuing to practice with my every breath when possible, what if I listened to the teaching that said, stop practicing, stop practicing, stop practicing? Well, if I stop practicing, what am I doing? If I stop practicing, which actually I don't even know if I could now because practice has become a new habit, sort of. But if I stop practicing, well, doesn't that mean that I'm not watching my mind anymore? I'm not inquiring about my thoughts anymore? You know, so just whatever comes up, I believe. Whatever comes up, I believe. Whatever comes up, I believe. Doesn't that mean I'm not taking the time to contemplate and allow wisdom to rise up anymore? If I'm not allowing wisdom to rise up anymore, aren't I going back to the default of ego, ego, ego? How's that going to get me out of delusion? If delusion comes from listening to ego and believing it, how is continuing to listen to ego and believing it going to wake me up? Practicing is simply making different choices besides listening to ego. There are a number of practices that help one to not listen to ego, and people adapt to different practices, and that's fine. But why would we ever tell someone to stop practicing if the meaning of practice is something to keep us from listening to ego? Why would we throw someone back to the wolves? Why watch the thinking and continually bring it back to useful practices? Because mind's imaginative thinking makes the world, which seems so real but is not. To be free from delusion, one must adhere to realization-centered practices. In other words, if we're not watching what we're doing, if we're not using wholesome, I saw the word wholesome today, I love that, wholesome practices, if we're not using wholesome practices in order to keep the mind not focused on ego, right, focused on more wholesome thoughts, well, then it's naturally just going to gravitate back to ego, and we're going right on, you could say, cranking out illusion. It's like we've turned the illusion machine back on. So as for me, because it's my guidance, practice is something I'm dedicated to, and my guidance always gives me the current practice. And the current practices do shift and change, and that's okay. But there's always, a day does not go by, an hour does not go by. I would like to say a minute does not go by, but that would be lying. But an hour does not go by. I'm sure not even a half hour. I bet maybe not even 15 minutes, because I am pretty well retrained to keep my mind with God. Practice is becoming more natural. And it's through this that the freedom will come. Because all of those attachments to belief in the world are being severed by no longer continuing to digest those thoughts. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 301. And I will post the link in the room. I'm getting hungry. I think I know what I might do after we finish here. Okay, 301. This is what Sri Nisargadatta says, first of all. The intelligence and power are all used up in your imagination. It has absorbed you so completely that you just cannot grasp how far from reality you have wandered. No doubt imagination is richly creative. Universe within universe are built on it. Yet they are all in space and time, past and future, which just do not exist. Again, number 301, the intelligence and power are all used up in your imagination. It has absorbed you so completely that you just cannot grasp how far from reality you have wandered. No doubt imagination is richly creative. Universe within universe are built on it. Yet they are all in space and time, past and future, which just do not exist. All right, let's look at 301 in the journal. One is not at all aware of the power that accompanies each choice. If this awareness was present, one would put much more effort into the right use of mind. Attention given to illusion keeps one entrapped in illusion. Attention given to realization sets one free. These are the options. Now make your choice. This kind of follows well based on what I just said regarding practice. Literally asking someone not to practice if they still perceive a world, it's like throwing them back to the wolves. Listening to someone telling us not to practice if we still perceive a world is like throwing ourselves back to the wolves. And, you know, I just love Sri Nisargadatta. He is so clear. He said, the intelligence and power are all used up in your imagination. It has absorbed you so completely that you just cannot grasp how far from reality you have wandered. And, you know, the journal says, one is not at all aware of the power that accompanies each choice. He says, you cannot grasp how far from reality you have wandered. The journal says, we're not at all aware of the power that accompanies each choice. And then it says, if this awareness was present, if we did know, we'd put a whole lot more effort into the right use of mind. It doesn't say that if we knew, it doesn't say that if we comprehended just how far from reality we wandered, we would stop practicing and enjoy that thought. It says if we knew just how far away we had wandered, we'd put more effort into practice. One is not at all aware of the power that accompanies each choice. If this awareness was present, one would put much more effort into the right use of mind. The right use of mind. And we've seen some definitions of the right use of mind, right? Inquiry, contemplation, remembrance, present moment choice. What is it that Jesus says in the Course about mind wandering? I know somebody can quote that. I know he has a point that he makes about mind wandering and how, you know, it's more dangerous than we realize. Not truly dangerous, of course. Not dangerous to the self that doesn't experience, the self that is not affected. You are far too tolerant of mind wandering. Yeah, this is the same thing. It's making a very strong point of that. You are far too tolerant of mind wandering. It has absorbed you so completely that you just cannot grasp how far from reality you have wandered in your mind wandering. You're not at all aware of the power that accompanies each choice. If this awareness was present, you would put a whole lot more effort into the right use of mind. This is what we're being told. Attention given to illusion keeps one entrapped in illusion. We don't become free by not watching our minds. We don't become free by not questioning our thoughts. We don't become free by not taking the time through meditation or contemplation or whatever is helpful to us to allow wisdom to rise to the surface. I can't think of a single reason not to take time every day to allow wisdom to rise to the surface, to allow wisdom to give me, you know, what Jesus would call my daily bread. Wisdom gives me daily bread every day, every day. Every day I'm given something to be the focus of my day today so that I don't have to allow mind wandering, that when the mind wandering starts to kick in, I can take my mind and put it back on the contemplation that was given in the morning. I can continue the practice of contemplation throughout the day. I can deepen in that contemplation. And then the next day, another one is given. But what if I quit taking that time? Pretty soon I don't have something to do with my mind, and it's just going to wander. Because the mind is going to do what the mind does. I either need to give it something to do, or it's going to do its thing. Because the mind thinks. And if I'm not giving it something to do, if I'm not spending time with wisdom to get my daily bread, to get my daily lesson, and I'm not giving the mind something to do, well, then it's going to be the illusion crank-out machine, and it's going to crank out illusion, and I'm not going to wake up through that. I'm just going to get caught up in that. You are far too tolerant of mind wandering, says Jesus. It has absorbed you so completely that you just cannot grasp how far from reality you have wandered, says Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. One is not at all aware of the power that accompanies each choice. If this awareness was present, one would put much more effort into the right use of mind. Attention given to illusion keeps one entrapped in illusion. Attention given to realization sets one free. These are the options. Now make your choice. All right, let's see if we can do one more. Let's scroll down and click on number 302. The mind was created to be the servant of the heart, Blackie is saying. That's perfect. All right, I'm going to give you a link to number 302, and then I will read Srinivasagadatta Maharaj. I'll read his comment. Whoops. Here's 302. All right, and here's from the top of page 62. Okay, this is a little bit of a conversation. So it starts off with Srinivasagadatta saying, "The body appears in your mind. In my mind, nothing is." And then there's a questioner. "Do you mean to say you are quite unconscious of having a body?" Srinivasagadatta, "On the contrary, I am conscious of not having a body." The questioner, "I see you smoking." Srinivasagadatta, "Exactly so. You see me smoking. Find out for yourself, how did you come to see me smoking? And you will easily realize that it is your 'I am the body' state of mind that is responsible for this 'I see you smoking' idea." Questioner, "If all that passes has no being..." Oh no, that's the next one. Sorry, we'll stop right there. So again, Maharaj is saying to him, "Exactly so, you see me smoking. Find out for yourself, how did you come to see me smoking?" See, he's recommending investigation. "Find out for yourself, how did you come to see me smoking? And you will easily realize that it is your 'I am the body' state of mind that is responsible for this 'I see you smoking' idea." All right, let's look at number 302 in the journal. "If I believe I am a body, I also believe others are bodies. By focusing on true isness, the idea I am a body dies. When this idea dies, there are also no others with bodies. Therefore, as a practice, remain focused on isness." So again, there's a complex and a simplex way of responding to this conversation between Srinivasagadatta Maharaj and a student or questioner. The complex way is to follow the ego into, "Well, wait a minute, if he's not a body, then, you know, how could he smoke? You know, how does he talk? You know, why does he respond, blah, blah, blah," you know, and get our minds all in that thought. And there's a simple way. The simple way is just to accept what Srinivasagadatta says at face value. It is my "I am the body" thought that is causing me to see him as a body smoking. And if the "I am the body" thought did not exist in me, I would not see him as a body smoking. If I just accept that and then go on with the practices, spend my time instead of worrying about how is it, you know, that he's not a body but he smokes, instead of letting my mind go off on that, if I just spend my time keeping my mind engaged in right-minded practices, focusing on isness is again one of them. We've seen this for the second time today. Or maybe it was actually last night, since I redid last night today. Second time this weekend, focusing on isness. The more I'm able to focus on that which is before the personality, before the mind, that which never changes, that which is consistent, the more I focus on that, the more I come to see I am that. And that does not smoke. That does not eat. that does not talk, that does not read books. The more I see that as what I am, the more I see that as what you could say everyone is. It is the body identification that causes me to say, you, Srinazargadatta, are a liar because you're smoking. You can't tell me you're not in the world, you're sitting there smoking. That's my belief that I'm a body that is accusing him of being a body. So it is my mind, my thought, that needs to be cleared away, seen to be untrue, purified, whatever word you like. I'm the one that needs to spend more time in my right mind, engaged in right-minded practices, questioning my thoughts, focusing on isness, beforeness, spending time in contemplation of good material. There's both good material to spend time in contemplation on, and there's also spiritual material that really isn't as strong and won't provide as much wisdom. And your inner guidance knows the difference. Your inner guidance knows the good material for you to spend in contemplation, the material that is going to result in a valuable contemplation, an honest rising of worthwhile wisdom. And I'm out of time, so I'm going to go ahead and click on done, and I'll see you all on Friday. Bye.